optimal minimal.
At this altitude, I can run flat out for a half mile before my hands start shaking.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Now would have seen an appropriate time.
What if I did the opposite?
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
The Tim Ferriss Show.
This episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. I get asked all the time what I would take if I could only take one supplement. The answer is invariably Athletic Greens. I view it as all-in-one nutritional insurance. I recommended it, in fact, in the 4-Hour Body. This is more than 10 years ago, and I did not get paid to do so. With approximately 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, you'd be very hard-pressed to find a more nutrient-dense and comprehensive formula on the market. It has multivitamins, multimineral greens complex, probiotics and prebiotics for gut health, an immunity formula, digestive enzymes, adaptogens, and much more. I usually take it once or twice a day just to make sure I've covered my bases if I miss anything I'm not aware of. Of course, I focus on nutrient-dense meals to begin with. That's the basis. But Athletic Greens makes it easy to get a lot of nutrition when whole foods aren't readily available. From travel packets, I always have them in my bag when I'm zipping around. Right now, Athletic Greens is giving my audience a special offer on top of their all-in-one formula, which is a free vitamin D supplement and 5 free travel packs with your first subscription purchase. Many of us are deficient in vitamin D. I've found that true for myself, which is usually produced in our bodies from sun exposure. So adding a vitamin D supplement to your daily routine is a great option for additional immune support. Support your immunity, gut health, and energy by visiting athleticgreens.com/TFS. You'll receive up to a year's supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your subscription. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/TFS, as in Tim Ferriss Show. athleticgreens.com/TFS.
The Work Lab podcast from Microsoft answers the questions that keep business leaders up at night. Like, how can I reinvent processes for the AI era, from customer service to sales to HR? How can I prepare for AI to fundamentally transform jobs, companies, industries, and the whole economy? Don't panic. Tune in. Each episode of Work Lab brings you the top experts, hard data, and actionable insights to help you future-proof your organization. Check out Work Lab, that's WORKLAB, no spaces, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, ladies and germs. This is Tim Ferriss, and welcome to another episode of the Tim Ferriss Show, where it is my job to tease out, distill, share the habits, routines, life lessons, belief systems, and so on, of world-class performers from all different domains. This episode features entrepreneur and supermodel Carly Kloss. That's 2 Ks. You can find her on Instagram and elsewhere at Carly Kloss, K-A-R-L-I-E-K-L-O-S-S. Carly was discovered at a local charity fashion show at age 13. And by this point, I think she's been on 45, 50 covers, something like that. Carly's fashion career quickly took off, and she has walked for top designers, including Oscar de la Renta, Christian Dior, Alexander McQueen, and Versace, among others. She's also starred in many major campaigns, including Adidas, or Adidas, depending on where you're listening to this, Donna Karan, Dolce & Gabbana, Dior, Calvin Klein, Carolina Herrera, if I'm getting that right, showing my stripes here, and Swarovski, among many, many others. But I wanted to have Carly on this show, not just because of her modeling career, of course, which I think gets discounted because thousands, tens of thousands of women or girls come into the world of modeling and very few make it to the top and very few last a long time and very, very few still are able to translate it to other things. Outside of modeling, Carly's passion for technology led her to take coding classes, learning to program. Inspired by coding's endless possibilities, she then launched Code with Klossy, K-O-D-E, Code with Klossy, a nonprofit that empowers young women to learn to code and become leaders in tech, which in 2018 will expand to 50 camps in 25 cities and may go well beyond that. Time Magazine has recognized Carly for her entrepreneurship and philanthropic work on its Time 100 list, and she was also featured on the covers of Fast Company and Forbes for her work with Code with Klossy. Carly hosts Freeform's 6-part series, Movie Night with Carly Kloss, and is a correspondent for the Netflix original series, Bill Nye Saves the World. And This will come up again at the very end. But if you are interested in learning more about Carly's coding camps, and application deadlines are coming soon, check out codewithclossy.com/apply. That's code with Clossy, all Ks, codewithclossy.com/apply. And without further ado, please enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with Carly Kloss. Carly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
I'm so thrilled to have you here, and I just want to make a few observations slash comments up front. So the first is...
Uh-oh, this could go anywhere.
I have a researcher who helps me with some prep documents. I certainly do my own prep. And his documents are usually very straightforward. He is affectionately called the crazy Bulgarian. He's not crazy. I just thought that he should trademark that. He is from Bulgaria. And he put a note at the top of yours. He never adds notes. And the note is... So open parentheses, note in all caps.
Oh my gosh.
She sounds like the nicest person on the planet, end parentheses. So that
wow, that's quite the compliment.
So that caught my attention.
Thank you.
And I should also say that I have a face made for audio. And this is a new, relatively new experiment with video. And this is the highest beauty differential that I've ever had on my show.
No, come on.
And I'm okay with it.
So maybe height, but not beauty.
Height also. So if those of you who are listening through your ear holes want to see a shiny bulbous head gnome on video, then you can find me side by side with
next
Carly.
To a giraffe.
Next
which
to
is
a
me.
Giraffe.
Yes.
So I wanted to start with talking about modeling.
Yes.
And there are a lot of beautiful people on this planet, and absolutely, there are many people who go into modeling, and there are very, very few who get to where you are. And mm-hmm. It strikes me that there are some, it would seem, success cases of, in this case, women who have gone off to build incredible businesses, like mm-hmm. Kathy Ireland, and there are others. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to start with asking you if you had, when you were getting started, or even now, any role models among women who, or men who have gone from modeling to do other things?
I mean, you certainly mentioned one, Kathy Ireland. There's a long list, you know, Cindy Crawford, Christy Turlington, Giselle, many women who are in the industry and have used their platform or voice or experiences to build businesses or to make meaningful impact in the world in whatever way they're passionate about. And like, for me, that is success. And I don't know. Yeah, I did not anticipate working in fashion or being a model, but I recognize somewhere along the line that there's so much more you can do with it, and the women who have come before me certainly have proved that.
It seems like, from the outside looking in, that much like, say, entertainment, the machinery of fashion, beauty, and so on probably has a lot of casualties, meaning it just chews up and spits out a lot of people. There's really high, it would seem
it's
to
a lot
be
of turnover.
A lot of turnover.
Yeah.
What were some of the key decisions that you and or your family or people like managers made that helped you to navigate, to avoid some of the most common pitfalls? Maybe you could just start with, like, what are some of the most common mistakes and pitfalls?
Sure. I mean, honestly, Tim, I feel like I'm living my own version of a Cinderella story or an American dream. I mean, I have been able to travel the world and have been able to learn from the most extraordinary people. I'm sitting here with you talking. I mean, this is, I feel like I'm living a dream every day. And you know, I certainly did not anticipate going into fashion or being a model. I had a very different kind of career path in mind. And I had this opportunity and I took it.
What was the opportunity?
So I was...
Now you grew up in the Midwest.
I grew up in the Midwest, and my father's a doctor. He's an emergency room physician, one of the most hardworking people you'll ever meet, and so selfless. And I have three sisters, and my mom's an artist. And so I just like grew up in this amazing Midwestern picturesque kind of childhood. And at 13, I was stopped in a mall and asked if I would be interested in walking in a fashion show. At the time, not only did I not care about it just wasn't my life, fashion. I mean, I didn't even subscribe to magazines. I was focusing on school. I was focusing on ballet, academics, and sports. And so anyway, this idea of modeling was like totally not even in my mind. And so I didn't enter this with the ambition of building a career in modeling. I was stopped in a mall at 13, walked in a local charity fashion show to raise money for a local family who's my friend's father. Her dad had cancer, so it was this charity benefit. And I was there were scouts there from real agencies, and they took my name and said, "Let's stay in touch." I grew a couple inches. Fast forward to when I'm 15. And
how tall are you at 15?
At 15, oh my God, Tim, I was 15 years old and 5'11".
Yeah,
it's painful.
I'm still working on 5'9". I'm 40.
Look,
I'm going to get there.
I believe in you. I believe in you. And so anyway, so I was 15 years old, and I got this opportunity to go to New York for the weekend and meet the designers of Calvin Klein, and they booked me, and I walked in their fashion show, and it completely kind of put me on the map as a new up and coming model. It's been a wild ride ever since that day in the mall when I was stopped.
What are the traps? Like, what are the common pitfalls? I mean, the things that, having grown up on Long Island, and for instance, I mean, I grew up at the very end of Long Island, where there are actually a lot of drug problems.
Yeah.
And not saying that it's drugs, although I suspect that could be a piece of it, but like, where do people get off track or make mistakes?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of misconceptions, and I think there's a lot of generalizations around the fashion industry, around the modeling industry. And, you know, I can only speak to my experience, but I've had just a really positive experience as a model. Like I said, it's been my key to the world. I've been able to travel the world. I have more frequent flyer miles than most CEOs, and I've been able to see the world and learn so much, learn from so many brilliant people. And so, you know, I've used it to my advantage. I think that there are aspects of the industry that are really challenging. I think a lot of people tell you no. A lot of people, there's a lot of, there's a lot of competition. There's like you said, I mean, there's so many beautiful people. There's a lot of luck. And I feel like for me, you know, in my Cinderella story, I feel like I was in the right place at the right time. And I had this window of opportunity and I ran for it. And I have an amazing family who was by my side every step of the way. I mean, starting a career at 15 is, I think there's pitfalls to that, just the nature of being 15 and having a lot of pressure on you. So for me, I had a lot of luck and the right people around me. And I think a lot of young women who want to go into modeling or work in fashion, that's not always the case.
How did your family help you in terms of rules and policies? And the reason I ask this is it seemed like they were quite strict when it came to high school homework and so on. So I was doing some reading prior to this, and a day might look like a 7 a.m. flight to New York to do some type of shoot.
Five a.m. flight.
Yeah. They get international coverage, and then you fly back, and you're doing homework at 7 p.m. and so on.
Yes.
What were some of the parameters, rules, policies, anything like that that your parents had to help keep you on track? Because this relates to something that has popped up a few times on this podcast that I think is really important. So could you speak to that?
Sure. I had this kind of double life. I was 15 years old and very much figuring out who I am, in high school. I mean, you're figuring out a lot of things. And I, like I said, I was a 5'11", 15-year-old. So that came with its own set of challenges. But I don't know. I guess I had this double life, and I would be in school, have a very normal day in class, sitting in the school lunchroom with my friends, with my peers, and then I would get on a flight to Paris or New York a couple days a week. I really had this full-time job, even as a freshman in high school. So I had this double life, and it was before social media, so none of my friends or teachers really knew to the extent of what I was doing. So I would go to Paris and walk in a couture runway show, or be the face of the Dior campaigns globally, or on the cover of magazines. And it was before the kind of global connectivity we have now. So I kind of was able to have a very, very normal real life, mm-hmm. as at the same time I was building this international career. And I think the discipline that my parents definitely helped me kind of stay really balanced with focusing on academics and focusing on what matters. I mean, we still would have normal family dinners, and I would get in trouble if I came home past curfew, or I don't know. I had like such a normal home life that I think that really was that balanced all of these amazing other things out. And I think my parents were always really, they trusted me. I think that's one of the biggest things too. They knew that I was, they trusted me to do the right thing. And that freedom, there's a lot of, I don't know, responsibility I felt with that, and gratitude to my parents, because I didn't want to let them down. And so I think I never wanted to ruin that.
Sort of betray that confidence.
Betray that, yeah.
So one of the reasons I ask is I'm fascinated by people who have reached a pinnacle of success in any field, mm-hmm. who can remain grounded in any capacity. Because it seems that whether it's alcohol, power,
yeah,
money, those are the three that come to mind.
Sure.
When you add those, any of those, in quantity, people tend to become more of what they are, right? So if they have a small flaw, mm-hmm. it gets magnified. And mm-hmm. if they're a small asshole, they become a really big asshole.
Right.
And there's real risk when pressure's added to the container. So
yeah.
I'm fascinated how people maintain perspective over time.
Yeah.
So that they don't become some abomination, like Frankenstein's yeah. version of themselves. And for instance, a friend of mine I've had on this podcast, Chris Sacca, who have had the
yeah,
privilege
of
watching go from angel investor, sort of fledgling VC to yeah. now, you know, Midas List.
Right.
Arguably I don't even think it's arguable, is his lowercase one fund is, I think, going to be the most successful venture capital fund in the history of venture capital.
Wow.
So he's really reached a peak. And when I've dug in with him as to how he's maintained some perspective, because
yeah.
he still ultimately is a very middle-class kid who grew up in upstate New York,
mm-hmm.
like trying to make ends meet. His parents had him do something called sweet and sour summers. So they would give him, they would help him to find a job that would give him an opportunity to learn,
right,
and interact with people who were maybe above his pay grade, above his parents' pay grade. But then they would also make him take some shitty job, like hauling around
heavy
things
on
a construction site.
I had plenty of those. I had yeah. plenty of those shitty jobs. To the extent of the normal life that this kind of double life that I had, my normal life, I can't stress it enough. It was very normal. Like I still had my like chores, doing the dishes, taking out the trash, like every 15-year-old. Didn't matter if I was on the cover of International Vogue. Like I was still coming home and doing my homework and, taking out the trash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and also, beyond just my parents, my sisters. I have three sisters that I'm really close with, and some of my best friends, my core group of girlfriends from growing up that I've known since kindergarten, are still some of my best friends. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's this, I feel really grateful that I've been able to keep my feet on the ground very much mm-hmm. so. And also I have a lot of people around me who would bat me over the head and like beat me up if I did it. You know, they yeah. would, they wouldn't allow it. They, mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
The support structure is also, people might
kind of
be asking
Midwest.
Themselves like, well, okay, you grew up that way. Fantastic. I didn't grow up that way. So it's not actionable. And what I would say is not true. Why would I explore this? It's because you can actually build in. It's like, all right,
yeah.
what is the version if you are hoping to achieve a certain modicum of success? Like
yes.
what are the chores that you can engineer into your life so that you maintain some perspective, right? There are ways
yeah.
to do it, right? Maybe it's volunteering once a week. And
yes.
And that helps you to not only hopefully ultimately achieve some success, but to achieve also some contentment and life outside of focusing only on your personal success, right? And which is actually a segue of sorts to, I'm going to get there. I'm going to talk about coding very, very shortly, but I'm going to get there vis-a-vis books. So I want to ask about books. Because I had read, maybe true, maybe not, that you don't actually watch very much television. So I was like, all right, great. Well, let's talk about books then.
Yeah.
Are there any particular books that you have gifted the most to other people or reread often yourself?
I love podcasts and I love audiobooks. I feel like I'm somebody who learns by listening. I retain information better. So I do like TV, but I just don't have a ton of time for it. I feel like I'm constantly on the go. And so I'm listening to audiobooks, whether I'm walking through airport security or in a cab to the airport. And I love, there's this book, The Four Agreements, that I recently gave my sisters who are graduating from college. And I just think, I think it's got a lot of great principles and ideas.
Are there any particular podcasts that are your go-to?
I love learning about things. I love learning about entrepreneurs. I love learning about, like, I love listening to conversations. I mean, I guess that's one thing too, that I feel like in my real life, I get to ask people. I'm sitting here with you, Tim. I mean, what a privilege that is.
You're welcome to rescind that comment later.
No, it's true. But I love listening to conversations. I love your work. I love Guy, How I Built This. I love listening to conversations.
So the Four Agreements, just for people who aren't familiar, has come up quite a few times in this podcast. And I also recently found out that Tom Brady had been gifting this book a whole lot as well. Has to catch you at the right time, I think, for it to be applicable. But the reason I brought up, you're going to say?
No, I was just going to say, you know, I'm 25 and I feel like it's to the point of the timing, because someone gave it to me for my birthday. And I just think that it really does come down to kind of this. I think we're always evolving, always growing, and should be always learning. At least I hope I am. And it really makes you focus inward. And I think it doesn't matter how old or young you are. I think that's something that I really value is growing as a human being. And it certainly kind of helps you think about ways to grow and focus as a human being.
So other ways to grow, we're going to get to it in two seconds. I brought up books because books involve writing, sort of expressing thought, in some cases on paper, in some cases in audio. And there's a craft, there's a certain elegance to good writing. And I've been fascinated by coding and coders for a very long time. And the fact that you can have, say, a very, very good coder get more done than the next 10 if he or she is just very, very elegant and can find non-obvious solutions in what they're trying to execute. And I've spent a very small amount of time with a guy named Chad Fowler, actually, who showed me many years ago the basics of Ruby. This was just in one afternoon, but he used natural language to help me get a grasp on it because he speaks Hindi, and I'm fascinated by different languages and was an East Asian studies major, so I'm fascinated by writing systems in Japanese, Chinese, Korean, etc. And so I wanted to ask you, of all the many, many things, of the hundreds and thousands of things that you could do with your time, right? How did you get exposed to coding? And walk me through your first experience or experiences with that.
Well, I love the way that you explain it as language, and that's really what it is. And I think that, like any language, it's a medium that you can express yourself, that you can express creative ideas, and that is why I think it's so powerful. I got exposed to it because I'm just a super curious, like annoyingly curious person. I ask a lot of questions and I love understanding how things work. I love understanding like how the world around me works and how science and math can be ways to explain that. But I work in a really creative industry and I I don't know. I guess at a certain point, a couple of years ago, I wanted to understand what code was. It was the term that I kept
hearing.
What
prompted it? Was it a person, a conversation?
Yeah. I mean, I was meeting a lot of entrepreneurs. I was watching the entire world, especially fashion and media, be transformed by technology. And I was like, what is it that a handful of people who are engineers and building huge enterprise value, what is the secret language that they know that the rest of us don't? And code. And I was like, what is code and how can I learn it? So I took a boot camp. I took one week. And even in...
Where was it?
In New York at the Flatiron School.
Who introduced you to that?
This guy, Avi Flavbaum. And he's a great teacher and he started the school and he taught me Ruby, similar exactly as you. Yeah. So like it's a very intuitive kind of language. And even in a short time, I was able to kind of understand high level, big principles. And the fact that you can use code to, you know, write a line of code that performs a function. And you can build ideas using this language. And that to me was just so mind-blowing to understand like how the tech that we touch every day, how it works, and to take it one step further, but to actually be able to write it yourself and to express your ideas and to be able to, I mean, you're so efficient, Tim. It's really inspiring. You're so organized and so efficient.
I'm organized for maybe like 2 hours a day. So you're seeing my 2 hours.
You are. It's impressive. And I just think that like even you can build tech to enable that and to scale that. And that's what's so powerful is the ability to scale ideas or scale problem solving using code. And I think that there's so much opportunity that has yet to really even be built in this kind of intersection of kind of many intersections of kind of creative industries from the perspective of someone writing code who has different life experiences or passions maybe than most engineers sitting in Silicon Valley today.
Mm-hmm. And you take this class.
Yeah.
You learn the basics of Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
With Avi. All right. And how does that, what is Code with Classy?
So Code with Classy
is the K, folks.
With the K.
K-O-D-E.
Is my organization where we teach girls to learn how to code and empower the next generation of tech leaders. So we do that by running summer camps across the country, and we teach girls the ABCs. So Ruby, HTML, JavaScript, CSS, enough to be able to build something. So our camps are across the country and they're 2 weeks long and they're totally free. Hmm. And we have these amazing girls who come into our camps and learn these skills, and it's amazing what they're able to build. And not only just the way that they're able to build their ideas, but what they're passionate about. So if it's like making social impact, helping their community, they're able to build something and recognize the impact that they can have. And that's really empowering. And that's that for a girl who's kind of, you know, at that point in life where you're like figuring out what you think you can be or what you think you can't, like that's really empowering.
I need to learn to code.
You need to learn. I feel like
I need to learn to code.
You need to come to our camp.
It's embarrassing that I've been in Silicon Valley, or I mean, I'm no longer there. We're in Austin and I live here, but 17 years in Silicon Valley. And I think I was worried that I wouldn't be good at it. And I had a deep insecurity that when I scratched the surface, I would see the infinite complexity of something that I could at best only be mediocre at. And so I stuck my head in the sand.
I disagree. I think that that's one of the barriers to entry. I think that's why a lot of people don't ever try. I mean, who am I? I'm like, I don't work in Silicon Valley. I didn't go to college. I'm curious, and it's something that can be learned like anything else. It is a language. And I think that a lot of people let that, get in the way of taking the first step.
Yeah. You know, it strikes me too, that I think perhaps in my mind, I've given myself an out, which is actually really flimsy. And that is that it'll be too hard to learn to code. And in my mind, like, learning to code is building, you know, the next super app to go gain 100 million users. Whereas in reality, I'll give you an example from my own experience, and I have some questions for you so I don't talk too much. This is what happens with too much caffeine. But so I've always been very, very insecure about my voice.
That's
part of the reason why I wanted to do the podcast, is to beat that out of myself or to get more comfortable with my voice. And if anyone listens to my earlier episodes, say the introductions to my early episodes, and then later you will see the confidence build over time. I was really unsure of myself in the beginning. And I'm still unsure of myself in some ways, but I've always been fearful of singing, any type of singing. I would never do it.
Look, I'm right there with you.
So I've always had on my New Year's resolutions almost every year for the last 6 years, along those lines, voice lessons. Never did it until a few months ago, just started. And what I realized very quickly is that I don't have to become a good singer to get incredible value out of these voice lessons, because I've learned enough now. I've certainly improved, but I'm not ready for any opera.
This might be your debut.
We will see.
After the podcast.
After the podcast. I won't impose that on anyone right now. It'll be very, very harsh. But when you learn the basics of any skill, and I already know this, so I don't know why I've been so blind to it with both singing and I think now coding.
Yeah.
Even if you never do anything with it per se, suddenly you hear everything. In the case of voice, you listen to every song you hear differently. And so your enjoyment of that and your appreciation of it is 10x'd.
Yes.
And I would imagine that when you learn the basics of coding, even if you don't use it to push you off into a different career, it gives you an entirely different lens through which you can look at everything that is being built and how things work.
1,000%.
And that alone, it's like that alone, to have that gift to look through a different lens for the rest of your life, putting in a week or two seems like a very potentially worthwhile use of time.
Absolutely. Tim, I mean, just on that point, it's like, you know, I think even if you understand high level how things are built, you can understand what is possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what's really exciting, even just for, you know, as an entrepreneur. You don't have to, I mean, there's probably so many people that you've sat with and that you met in Silicon Valley that even you know, a friend of mine, Kevin Systrom, it founded Instagram, and one of the co-founders of Instagram, and he wrote lines of code early on, and actually, you know, I think that was one of the aha moments. I knew him as a friend, and I was like, wait, Kevin, you actually know how to code? You actually built lines of code to build this tool, this platform that reaches so many people. Like, it put a human element to it. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea of even learning a little bit of what code is and how it builds things, it makes you realize what could be possible. Mm-hmm. And I think for people who want to build businesses, you don't have to be the main engineer. I think but there is this kind of literacy that I think is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly seems to be the new literacy, or one of the new forms of literacy that over time, as software eats the world, to borrow Mark Andreessen's expression, if you don't want to be displaced, if you want to be able to compete, you need to at least understand the ABCs.
Yeah.
And easy for me to say with my platform and microphone, as someone who's being a bit hypocritical, since I only did one afternoon of Ruby with Chime.
Until you come to my coding
camp. I come to your camp.
The other thing is too, Tim, is that like part of the reason why I wanted to take a class beyond just wanting to understand how the world was being transformed by technology and what specifically that meant, but it's like, because I was so intimidated by it, because I work in fashion, because I am not someone who maybe looks like the most, you know, most people in Silicon Valley or engineers. I don't know. I wanted, like, there's something in me, I think, that wanted to do what I think would be the hardest possible thing to do. Mm-hmm. Or like, I don't know. And not, this was not even about building an organization and helping other people do the same thing. This was just for me, selfishly. I wanted to learn something really hard. Mm. And I think that there's probably a part of me that's like, you know, insecure, you know, speaking of, about like the fact that I am I know that I'm more than just what people see me on the outside. And I think that I think that insecurity probably has driven me to want to keep doing more. Mm-hmm. I am just a really curious, passionate person. And I think I've always been really interested in math and science. And I don't know, I think that that's partially why I tackled this challenge too. Initially, it was like, I want to learn what do people really think is hard to learn? I want to learn it.
Well, let's talk about a challenge for a second, or more than a second.
Yeah.
And I don't know the attribution, but there's a quote I really like, which is everything you want is just outside of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And I'm sometimes better at practicing that than at others. But I'd love to talk about discomfort for a second.
Sure.
Right? Because I think people have, there are many misconceptions about anyone who has a lot of public exposure like yourself. So yeah. One might be, she's just a pretty face, right? Sure. Which is not true. Sure. Another might be, it's all come very easily. It's all been very easy. It's just been home runs from day one. So what I'd love to ask you is, could you tell us about, you can choose.
Sure.
We could talk about both, like a dark/hard time, what yeah. prompted it and how you came out of it, or a failure that looking back helped set the stage or teach you something that led to success later. And the more specific, the better, because yeah. I want to humanize this a little bit for people who yeah. might feel like this is that you're,
I think, you know, there, I mean,
perfect.
So many, far from perfect, so far from perfect. It's like beyond, but for me, I think that there have been many failures along the way, but also I am the toughest person on myself.
And let's talk about a specific one.
I mean, there's so many moments I can just think about in my fashion career, you know, where I didn't quite. I mean, it's funny how you define like a failure or even like dark moments. I think I've started, I have built my career over the past 10 years of my life, and I was 15 years old when I started that. And I think there's just natural human growth that happens over those 10 years. That's really important. And no matter what you're doing, you like need to take those failures and challenge yourself to make yourself grow from them and be better. And for me, I think because I live in a more public life, or aspects of my life are more public, those failures or dark, you know, periods of growing up, of coming into your own, of growing into your own body, like that's even more criticized or more people have can see it. And so I think for me, I definitely, so many different periods in my life where like, you know, being in the profession that I'm in, it's very focused on like the outside and your body. And as a teenage girl, like growing into your body, I mean, there's so many times I've gone into a fitting where the clothes don't fit, and that just has made me feel so shitty about myself. And it's not necessarily my fault. It's not necessarily the clothes' fault. It's just, it's shitty. It makes you feel horrible. It's made me feel horrible about myself. And I think there was kind of this point progressively through my career that I was like, I am so much more than just like my measurements or my body. I have so many ideas. I've got so much drive. I know that I have so much to give the world, and I really want to help other people. And I know that I'm not necessarily doing that, or the extent of my self-worth or value cannot be just on fitting the clothes or not. And I think that there was like a real shift in me, and just understanding, like, I don't know, understanding how and what to do to keep growing.
So are there any particular, for instance, routines, habits, on a daily or weekly basis that help you to continue functioning at a high level, or that just help you, that you like? Like, what are some specifics? The listeners always love the specifics. Are there any particular?
I love meditating. I think that.
How long do you practice meditating?
So I'm not as probably good or disciplined as many of your listeners out there, but whenever I can, to the point of,
do you use an app?
I use Headspace. I learned TM, but I just do it whenever, wherever I can. So, this morning getting ready, I wake up, stretch, breathe, put in, 10 minutes of Headspace, go to the gym or vice versa, work out and then meditate and then start my day. Mm-hmm. I really have learned how important it is to take care of myself mentally as well as physically. Because I think, part of being in just part of life is, staying mentally healthy and balanced. Yeah. And I think especially in an industry that, that there is so much volatility. I mean, to the point of models and turnover, there's a lot of failures daily of jobs you don't get or things that you're, I've been told that I'm too tall, too short, too fat, too skinny, too this, too that, everything. I mean, it's like, and that is such a, that if that doesn't mess with your head as a teenage girl growing up anyway, then, I mean, come on. So again, for me, having an amazing support group around me, having like really my family, my friends, like, and then having outlets that fill my cup. So for me, investing in my learning sincerely is something I love. I love learning new things. I love learning from people. I love experiencing new things. And I love helping people, not for the sake of like any reason other than just, I love sharing, opportunities for other people to better themselves, their lives too.
Well, let's talk about one outlet / maybe stress release valve, which is the exercise.
Yeah.
Right? So what is your morning? What is a sample morning exercise routine look like?
Totally.
Very specifically, and how long does it take? Like what exercises are you doing?
Okay. So I grew up playing every sport, doing ballet every day. I grew up super, super active, and I live a really busy life today, and I'm on a plane all the time. I mean, it's not easy to fit it in, but for me, I make sure that I fit in like a combination of cardio and a combination of strength training. So I feel best when I'm strong, not skinny. And
so tell us about a recent workout.
So this morning, woke up, meditated, and worked out for 45 minutes, all I had time for.
Did you have breakfast before you worked out?
After I worked out. And a combination of running, biking, and some light weights. Mm-hmm. And just, I kind of do whatever I can whenever I can. So like if I'm in the south of France on a photo shoot, I'll go for a run and a swim. If I'm here in Austin, I'll go for a run across that cool bridge and like go tour around.
Whatever's available. For strength training, if you had to pick only a handful of exercises that you could that seem to get you the most bang for the buck, what would they be? What comes to mind?
I hate burpees so much. I hate them so much.
You hate them, but it's a love hate?
It's a love hate, because I just like, I hate them so much that I just know they're probably good for me. Burpees, things that you can do anywhere. So like planking or exercises, like things that I do in my hotel room. Like if I don't have time to go down to the gym. So just simple things like sit-ups, push-ups, dips, all sorts of
portable,
really boring things like that.
I mean, boring but effective. I wanted to get into specifics because I'm always curious, when I meet someone who travels as much as you do, right? It makes it very clear that I haven't been able to work out because I'm traveling excuse is utter bullshit. And I'm always curious how people make do, right? So I've talked to Triple H, otherwise known as Paul Levesque, fascinating guy, and he'll use stationary bike or elliptical for say 10-15 minutes when he first arrives anywhere after shifting time zones, and it seems to fix jet lag for him. Same. Danzig, when they were traveling around touring, one of the very first things they would do is they would choose a hotel based on the gym that was available.
Oh, 100%. Right?
And it's like Bruce Lee would always travel with his running shoes because he knew no matter what, if other things weren't available, he could run.
So,
and it just goes on and on and on. I travel with a number of different bands as well as an inflatable yes. ball. And it's incredible what you can do. Particularly if you learn calisthenic exercises mm-hmm. like burpees or pistols, which are one-legged squats, mm-hmm. you can get a brutal workout in mm-hmm. your own hotel room. Or Jocko Willink, who's a retired Navy SEAL commander, he'll travel with, or he won't necessarily travel with, but he'll, if he wants to do pull-ups and he can't find a place to do pull-ups, he'll grab one of the towels from his room in the yes. hotel, go find the parking structure and throw it over a bar and do pull-ups with the towels. So it's like there's two observations that I make. Number one, there's always a way. But secondly, that the highest functioning, seemingly busiest people I've met almost all make a point to move on a daily basis in some fashion.
It's so important for me in my life. It's crucial. Forget even about how it, you know, how it makes you look, but how it makes you feel, and just your, for me, brain, mental, emotional balance, I think, and focus and clarity. It's like I can't start my day without doing something. And to the point of whatever it is, you know, I in my suitcase always have my running shoes, always have bands, always have ankle weights, which is really funny when I'm going through airport security and I've got like two ankle weights that look like bombs and yeah. you know yeah. they're like lead ankle weights and I get stopped every time and get, you know, questioned.
Ankle weights and podcast gear.
Ankle
it's like, oh, a bunch of batteries and cables.
Yes.
Yeah, we need to talk to you.
We're high risk
Mr.
travelers.
American History X. For those of you who don't know, I'm very, very bald and have sort of a wrestlery look to me.
Not now.
So let's chat about investing. And by investing, I mean investment of time, energy, maybe in a particular relationship. I'm gonna say you can't answer with your family.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm gonna roll them out. But what would you consider one of the best investments you've ever made? And that could be, for instance, Amelia Boone, who's been on the podcast, 4-time world champion in obstacle course racing. For her at the time, she was and still is a lawyer, but it was the first $450 entry fee for the first, I think it was World's Toughest Mudder, which she ended up winning, mm-hmm. which opened up this entirely new career, right? Yeah. Doesn't have to be something like that. But you know, in my case, it could potentially be the idea to put in the time to do a 6-episode test for the podcast.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. And that was just supposed to be a side gig because I was too burned out writing books. Now it turned into a whole thing. What comes to mind for you when you think about some of the best investments of time, energy, money, or decisions?
So a number of things. One, the first pair of high heels that I ever owned were $20 high heels from Target mm-hmm. that I learned how to quote unquote walk. Mm-hmm. And that those came in very handy when I started my fashion career. And I, with my first paycheck ever, bought a red KitchenAid mixer that still sits on my counter to this day. And thousands of cookies have been made from that little mixer. And I got the idea of starting a vegan cookie charity project from my passion for baking, and that led on to a whole fun project. And
take a few sentences just to explain what that is.
So that's really just what it sounds like. It's a charity project focused on donating school lunches to kids through selling cookies, which I love to. I love to eat cookies. I love to make cookies. And I wanted to kind of have a bake sale mm-hmm. of sorts.
Do you have any partners?
We partnered with Momofuku Milk Bar.
Yeah, for those who don't know that, look it up.
Look it up. Must visit when you're in New York. And we made cookies and we donated over 1 million school lunches from the sales of these cookies. Mm-hmm. And that was just this kind of first project where it was really my idea and this something that I built and used my voice to mm-hmm. take an idea and actually bake a cookie and bake an impact mm-hmm. into that. product.
And so we got the heels, which like the if you can't walk in those, you're gonna have issues as a female in fashion. The KitchenAid mixer. So KitchenAid, if you're listening, mm-hmm. I'm sure Carly has very reasonable endorsement rates, so you can reach out.
And investing in time. You know, honestly, two things. One, I applied back to NYU because I love learning and I wanted to be back in an environment where I could keep growing and learning. And that was at 20 years old. That was mm-hmm. after 5 years already of working full time. And so I invested back in being a student, and that also led me to taking a coding class, and that led me to starting Code with Klossy. And
what did you go in to learn?
I wanted to learn anything, everything. I have so many things that I love.
So question, I want to...
Because I know you're really a curious person, too. I feel like...
But I want to dig into the motivation for one second. Yeah. So I have some friends, very, very smart, very accomplished, who either didn't ever go to college or dropped out of college. Mm-hmm. And some of them, for some of them, going back and getting the diploma was just a... And this is not a bad motivation at all, but they had carried some type of... like defensiveness and insecurity about having not gone mm-hmm. to college and finished. Was that any piece of it?
100%. I was planning on becoming a physician, a doctor, emergency room doctor, something like my dad. And so or go to business school or go to some, I always planned on having a very, at least getting a college degree. And so yeah. I think there's an element of wanting to kind of keep learning more, keep doing more, not for the sake of getting the degree, but for mm-hmm. the sake of being in an environment where I can keep expanding my horizons. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing is like I have that through my job as well. There's so many ways that I'm able to learn just by traveling and meeting people. And I feel like everybody has that. It's not just, I mean, I am a unique situation. I get to travel to crazy places, but I think just, it's kind of a mindset, a mentality, a perspective mm-hmm. of just keeping your eyes and ears open.
Do you have any favorite classes or professors besides the coding? Anything come to mind?
I took a feminism class at NYU, which was really fascinating for understanding the history of feminism, academic perspectives, the different waves of feminism, a lot of academic reading around the topic beyond just kind of rah-rah girl power.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you mentioned a number of things. Are there any purchases, say, in recent memory? This is one of my rapid fire questions. Mm-hmm. So I know it's a bit of an awkward transition from feminism, so I apologize to people for that. But are there any particular purchases that have had a very positive impact on your life, ideally of the, say, less than $100 or less than $1,000 variety?
Mm. I love journaling on airplanes. I sit for, you know, especially that flight back to St. Louis is only 2 hours. So it's like 2 hours of uninterrupted time. And every airplane that I'm sitting on, I always journal and brain dump ideas, mm-hmm. grocery lists. I've had, it's really pretty remarkable looking back at those journals and thinking how much of the things that I listed out of dreams and goals that I've been able to tick off and accomplish. Mm-hmm. And I think that an investment of a journal, a great Moleskine, certainly has been worthwhile. And really just something that I think is a great exercise. Mm-hmm. And I really love, like, actually, like I said, taking care of myself and my mind and body. And so, like, I always have all these in my suitcase. I've got all these crazy supplements, like moon juice, dusts. They have like brain dust and beauty dust, and it's like crazy potions of like ashwagandha and things that I'm a total sucker and believer that, like,
yeah.
So I travel with all these potions in my suitcase along with my bands and ankle weights.
When you use the notebooks, mm-hmm. What does a page look like and how do you follow up? So what I'm curious to know is how things make it from the page into reality, right? Do you go back and figure out what next steps are? Do you write down next steps in a particular way? And people have so many different ways of approaching this. I mean, in my case, in my journal, I wish I had it right here, but I always make a little box in the bottom right-hand corner, mm-hmm. and that's for next steps based on anything on that page. Smart. And so every bottom right-hand corner has next steps. And then I'll go through and I'll be like, all right, that was a stupid idea. Or like, that's not for now. And I'll just highlight, I'll do a second pass and then highlight the kind of dominoes that I think will topple as many other dominoes as possible. But how, when you brain dump or when you put these things on paper, like walk us through what that
next
looks
steps.
Like. Yeah.
There's also this app that's called Wunderlist. That's great. And for actually having a more digital version of those lists. And then also things like Slack are great too. The notebook is more just like my real personal kind of deepest, darkest thoughts and ideas and goals. And like nobody's judging. Mm. Hopefully nobody's reading them. Yeah. But I think the organization, I love this is the way your brain works. I think my brain is not the most organized. I have a lot of ideas, and I think it's actually taken a lot of discipline to kind of keep everything moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think it's like going through those lists and following up with the people that I need to continue the conversation with, or I've got an amazing team. I've got a great partner who is helping me build Codas Klossy, building all
Who's
my businesses.
That?
Her name's Penny Thau. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. And I feel like it's a really collaborative process. Taking those lists and actually turning them into action is more the working with my team. Mm-hmm. To bring them to life.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've noticed, and tell me if this is off base or not, but in doing a lot of homework on you, putting together the dossier.
I know, first of all, I need to send cookies to your friend, the crazy...
Oh, the crazy Bulgarian.
Bulgarian.
Oh my God. Crazy Bulgarian. I know you're listening. You're in luck.
Thank you, crazy Bulgarian.
You need some cookies. Don't forget me. I could use some cookies too. I'll say it's for my cheat day, but I might actually break that rule. I have to be careful around cookies. One of those, very little portion control when it comes to cookies,
it turns out.
But
I'll send you healthy ones.
Also send me the unhealthy ones. You can address them to somebody else and then I'll just eat them anyway.
Okay,
The pattern that seemed to pop up was, and I think this actually makes you a lot smarter than I am in some really deep ways, is when I go through my notebook and I write down what needs to be done next, like what do I need to do next? And it seems like as I've looked through a lot of your history, mm-hmm. you are much better at doing one thing that's really important that I need to improve upon. And that is not asking what do I need to do next necessarily, but who do I need to talk to next? Mm-hmm. And whether it's Kevin Systrom or say Casey Neistat, who's also mm-hmm. been on the podcast related to vlogging, I've had a lot of trouble. It doesn't even occur to me to ask for help, not because I think I have all the answers, but I don't want to burden people with that. Or there's some weird baggage that I carry, which is why Amanda Palmer, at one point, the musician, really is, and her book has really helped me to learn how to ask for help. But is that accurate? Am I all
100%? My gosh! I mean, again, I'm somebody who didn't get a college degree, a business school degree, and I'm trying to build businesses and a nonprofit and scale that impact and grow my team and be a boss. I mean, there's so many things that I'm learning as I go. And I think that what I really value is the people that I can lean on as mentors or advisors in figuring it out. And I think that that's a really important thing that I also kind of had this awakening where I was like, I am in the room with extraordinary people and I'm being afforded that opportunity because of my day job, being a model, working on big advertising jobs, working in an industry with a lot of creatives. Like, how can I actually best use that to accomplish what I really dream of, what my biggest goals and ambitions are? And I think a lot of people sometimes are afraid to ask for help, or and I definitely have. I ask questions.
You ask for help.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what my problem is with that. I mean, I've gotten better, but I it's one of these self-defeating habits of isolating myself that is kind of a it's a default that I need to continually work on. I get better for periods and then I'm like, ah, no, I need to figure this out. I should be able to figure this out and like sit down with my notebook. Not always the ideal tool of choice. So I need to revisit. Amanda, need your help. I'll reread your book. If you look at the last handful of years, are there any particular habits, beliefs, tools that have had a tremendously positive impact on your life besides things we mentioned already?
Yeah.
So it can't be, say, meditation or Headspace or one of these.
You know, I think just learning by doing. I, for a long time, you know, over the past years, I find it so interesting to just see how much the whole world has changed in so many ways. You know, you mentioned Casey Neistat. I had a conversation with him a number of years ago where I...
if you want to talk about busy.
Yeah, talk about busy. Talk about
Look up Casey Neistat.
He's amazing. And he really helped me realize that I could not just be a canvas for creators, but I could be a creator myself. And I think there was kind of this overall shift in certainly in fashion, in social media, enabling a platform and a voice for everyone. Doesn't matter if you are the model, your voice is can be heard in the same way the brand or designers can, and that extends for everyone, and that's beyond just fashion. But there was this kind of shift in my own perspective of realizing that my ideas had value and that I could be a creator and share what I was experiencing and learning and doing beyond just what was translated by somebody else, or I didn't have to just be seen, but I could also be heard.
Yeah.
And I think that there was something really empowering in that, and that's been a kind of a collective shift over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this kind of democratization of ideas and of voices and this kind of, instead of just a handful of people in power at the top, like everybody has the opportunity to build something with their ideas, and that's to the point of like code being this ability to actually actualize that, to realize that, to have ideas that whether it's a problem you're facing or an idea for a company or an idea for making impact. I mean, being able to actually build that, even if you're a 15-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's something so exciting about like there being no rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of the rules that maybe existed in the world or in the industry that I work in 10 years ago are no longer the case. And I think it's exciting to see what is ahead of us.
That's exciting. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly still top-down power, and there are certain things that require political relationships and so on, but more and more so, the ability to develop bottoms-up power is available to anyone who is willing to learn and compete.
Yes.
That's the good news. The bad news, potentially, is you better fucking compete, because guess what? When there are, say, 3 to 4 billion additional people coming online in the next handful of years,
right,
you have to compete against everybody. And I think that's a very good thing. But it also means you can learn from everybody.
Yes.
And that information is available. So just a few more questions. Billboard, you've probably heard this question before, because I like to ask it, but if you could put a few words, a word, a quote, anything on a billboard, can't be an advertisement, to get a message out to millions or billions of people, metaphorically speaking, what might you put on that billboard?
I feel like that's so, that there are so many things that I probably should be putting on that billboard. But one thing that my dad always used to really hammer home to me and my sisters is like, we would come home from school, and if one of us got a bad grade or something, he would say, like, did you give it your best? Like, only you actually really know. Like, did you give it your best? Did you study the best you could? Did you go in there, like, as focused as possible? Did you give it your best? And I think that there's something really, like, important to always just keep in mind is, like, give it your absolute best. And also be present. I think that's the other thing, too. Those are two things that I always kind of think about to myself. Like, am I doing my absolute best? Yes. Then, like, cut myself a break. Like, even if I can't compare myself to anyone else, because my best, only I know what that actually is. And I think being present is a really important exercise always.
Did you give it your best? That's a really important question. Yeah. I feel like you are giving it your best, at least from the outside looking in.
Definitely trying the best I can. I mean, yeah. I certainly don't have all the answers. I think that's one thing too, is I'm 25 years old and like all of my, I'm far from perfect but I've sincerely just given it my best every step of the way and taken opportunities that I've been able to have and make the most of them, learn from them, keep growing, never kind of being satisfying or staying complacent, and then also thinking about how I can help others along the way.
So you have a very exciting year ahead of you, as I'm sure will be many, many years of excitement ahead of you.
Thank you.
I'm always super eager to support anything related to enabling through education. I mean, that's been a real focus of mine with a number of different organizations over the last 10 years or so. What closing comments might you have and ask of the audience, a suggestion of the audience, certainly if they can learn more about how to code or share that with girls or people who may want to attend one of your camps? What would you like to share, ask of, or recommend to the audience?
Well, you have an incredible audience, and anyone out there listening, I ask just, if you know any young women between the ages of 13 and 18 who you think would benefit from learning to code or would be interested, send them to codewithclossy.com to apply for our free camps. We're going to have 1,000 spots. This is a really, really big summer of growth for us.
How long are the camps?
The camps are 2 weeks long, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and they are action-packed. There's so much that the girls do over the course of these 2 weeks, and we are growing to 50 camps in 25 cities across the country. So it's a big summer for us, and we want to get as many amazing young women in these classes and in these camps. So send them to codewithclossy.com to apply.
Codewithclossy.com, KODE with, hopefully you guys can spell that, KLOSSY.com. What was the age range again?
13 to 18.
13 to 18. So think about this for a second, folks. You may say, I don't know any 13 to 18-year-old girls. All right. Do you have any daughters? Do your friends have any daughters? Are you a teacher with female students who might benefit from this? Consider it. This is, in many, many respects, the new literacy. And I'm going to get off my lazy ass and stop procrastinating.
And come to my coding camp.
And actually give it a shot. Yes. Yeah, talk about Where's Waldo. That'd be easy to pick out. who's the bald, shiny gnome among the 12 to 18-year-old girls? Oh, why is Tim Ferriss here?
You're the only boy we'll let in.
So codewithclossy.com. People can find you everywhere, of course. Carly Kloss, at Carly Kloss, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. If you had, is there any one of those three that you would prioritize?
For applying or for
No, just for people who want to.
I love Instagram. That's my first go-to.
That sounds like a native environment for you. So Instagram, at Carly Kloss. Code with Klossy is at Code with Klossy on all the socials and codewithklossy.com. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you, Tim.
This was really fun. Really? And for people listening, as always, we'll have links to everything we've discussed, including the websites, social, books, etc. in the show notes, tim.blog/podcast. And until next time, thank you for listening. And
hey guys, this is Tim again. Just a few more things before you take off. Number one, this is Five Bullet Friday. Do you want to get a short email from me? Would you enjoy getting a short email from me every Friday that provides a little morsel of fun before the weekend? And Five Bullet Friday is a very short email where I share the coolest things I've found or that I've been pondering over the week. That could include favorite new albums that I've discovered. It could include gizmos and gadgets and all sorts of weird shit that I've somehow dug up in the world of the esoteric as I do. It could include favorite articles that I've read and that I've shared with my close friends, for instance. And it's very short. It's just a little tiny bite of goodness before you head off for the weekend. So if you want to receive that, check it out. Just go to 4hourworkweek.com. That's 4hourworkweek.com, all spelled out, and just drop in your email and you will get the very next one. And if you sign up, I hope you enjoy it. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. Man, oh man, do a lot of listeners of this podcast and readers of mine love FreshBooks to the extent that I ended up meeting with the CEO not very long ago. Why are they so popular? Well, they are the number one cloud accounting software designed exclusively for self-employed professionals. That's many of you, and used by more than 10 million people. You can send invoices, track your time, and get paid very, very quickly, which suits the needs of a lot of freelancers, a lot of entrepreneurs, and beyond. You can take pictures of receipts. You can link your credit card and debit card, so all the things you buy automatically appear in your FreshBooks in the right category. So on and so forth. Makes taxes easy, makes invoices easy, makes your life easier. And also, in fact, I'd recommend a PDF. They didn't ask me to read this part, by the way. They put together a PDF a while back called Breaking the Time Barrier, subtitle How to Unlock Your True Earning Potential. So you can search for Breaking the Time Barrier. A lot of people ask me, how can I get a 4-hour work week with a service business? And the story in that ebook, it's PDF, is the short answer. It's really, really good. So I think you should also check that out. So Breaking the Time Barrier, check it out. But also, why not test out FreshBooks? Claim your 30-day unrestricted free trial at freshbooks.com/Tim and enter Tim Ferriss, two R's and two S's, in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That sounds like we're going to get very little tracking. That's a lot of work. But just go to freshbooks.com/Tim and try it out, because it is a very good product and I think you will find it simplifies your life. Enjoy. This episode is brought to you by 99 Designs. Whether you need a logo, custom website, app, book cover, or anything else, 99 Designs was created to make great design accessible to everyone, that's you, and to make the process as easy as possible. I've used 99 Designs for years now. I've used them for book covers, some mock-ups for the 4-Hour Body, which went on to become a number one New York Times bestseller, illustrations of all different types for the multi-volume The Tao of Seneca, which you can check out, and other graphic design projects for a long time now. And I've been very impressed by the quality of their designers and illustrators. And you don't have to take my word for it. You should check out some of my projects at 99designs.com/Tim. I really encourage you to take a look because you will be impressed. 99designs.com/Tim. 99 Designs has freelance experts in more than 90 design categories, and their platform lets you work directly with one designer that you choose if you like their stuff, which is what I did for the Tao of Seneca, or you can get concepts from multiple designers and then pick your favorite. So whether you're starting a business or just looking for extra design help, resources, etc., 99 Designs has a solution. Right now, you guys, my listeners, can receive a free $99 upgrade on your first design. To check out your first free upgrade, please visit 99designs.com/Tim and click the link on the landing page. You can also find there samples of projects from you guys, listeners, who have used 99 Designs for logos, apps, even product packaging. So check it out, 99designs.com/Tim.